Hail cheaters, and welcome to Always Cheating. My name is Josh, and I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm great, Josh. We're recording from the country that now holds the Gold Cup, USA.
That is true. I watched a little bit of that Gold Cup game, too. It was not too bad.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. I mean, Jordan Morris, one of our more square-looking strikers, pulled it out in the end against Jamaica, and the country has been buzzing ever since with this Gold Cup.
So, Brandon, you'll notice I just said always cheating at the start of the podcast because I think I've officially been so shamed on Twitter about the way that I say premiere.
Okay.
That I now just kind of don't want to say it anymore. It's like I'm like gun shy.
If we didn't say any words that people shamed our pronunciation of, this would probably be a 15-second podcast, Josh.
Yeah, people know that there are words that are pronounced differently in the U.S. than they are in the U.K., right? That is like a thing that's like pretty common knowledge.
Well, we don't need to get into all of it here, Josh, but words are pronounced differently all over the world.
That is true. That is true. I always like to start a podcast by yelling at the people who are listening to the podcast.
Well, what are we actually going to do in this podcast all today, so Josh?
This podcast, which is about the fantasy premier. Did I say that the right?
Now I'm I think you got it. Yeah.
I'm like Reek in Game of Thrones. Like I'm so jittery now. We talk about the FPL game, and we talk about strategies, and we talk about our teams, and what else we talk about. It's like I've suddenly forgot what we talked about when you asked me what we talk about.
Well, we revel in the glory that is the Fantasy Premier League. We talk about our teams, we talk about players to watch, to pick up, to avoid, and we're going to talk about a lot of that heading into game week one. In this episode, we're scouting Manchester City through West Ham. So if you want to go back one episode of Always Cheating, episode 86, we give you a scouting report on teams A through L. That's Arsenal through Liverpool. So this is part two of two parts scouting all the league teams.
That is true. And I actually think this is the more important of the two parts. I mean, if for the first two teams alone, we're getting right to Man United and Man City, you know, right off the bat. But before we do that, Brandon, just quickly, I think we did a bit of a long intro last time, and so if you've gone right from part one to part two, I just want to quickly say thank you to we have a bunch of new Patreon supporters, even just since the last podcast, which went out just a few days ago.
In the blink of an eye,
and so I want to quickly say thank you to Kieran O'Keefe, Graham Lushke, George Thomas, Bruce Kerr, Paul Ruki, Not Mr. Lifto, John Henson, John Torstensen. Thank you all. And if I have not sent you all of your league codes yet, I will definitely get those to you in the next day or so. I've been kind of doing some primary baby duties in the last couple of days, and so I'm a little behind schedule on some of the stuff.
Speaking of league codes, to join our special Patreon supporter only league, you have to become a Patreon supporter before the season starts, before August 11th. So we've got other features over there on our Patreon page that you can take advantage for a small amount to support the Always Cheating podcast.
You can actually join the regular league at any time, but if you want to get into the head-to-head league, you're going to have to join by August 11th.
Yeah, the ranks of the Always Cheating Super League continue to grow as usual. So if you just want to join our regular, huge, massive, very competitive Always Cheating Super League, just head to our website, alwayscheating.com, and click the league tab. Right there, you can hit the auto join button.
That's right. And this is really our shortest ever intro. This is great. I almost regret yelling at everybody at the beginning of this episode.
Well, you can't take it back at this point, Josh.
That's true. One last thing I want to say before we get right into the episode is please help us spread the word about the podcast. We have not reached full cultural saturation the way that we want to. You know, we want grandmothers and great grandmothers and, you know, if you have great grandmothers, we want them listening to it too. So please,
this is really the matriarch podcast of all FPL podcasts.
So if you know someone who's in your mini league, who is maybe they're just not a very experienced manager, and you think this podcast might be helpful to them, maybe not so helpful that it's actually going to have them win the league over you, please share the podcast with them or tell them where they can find it on iTunes and SoundCloud and so on. Okay, you know what. this is like we're at the risk of doing another 20-minute intro. So let's cut it. Let's move right into our team previews after this break.
Same old podcast, always cheating.
Brandon, it's part two of our team previews. The first team is a very important team for Fantasy Premier League managers this year. It is the Citizens Manchester City. Mascot is Moonchester and Moonbeam.
Two mascots, an embarrassment of riches. If they didn't have all that oil money already, now they have two mascots?
I know, exactly. It's not bad. Players to buy. Okay, so if you haven't listened to the last week's podcast, we're breaking this down loosely. Let's say that much loosely. A lot of these people fall into multiple categories. But it's basically players to buy, people you might want to consider bringing your squad, you know, right from the start of the season or, you know, by your first wild card, assuming, you know, a lot of managers are going to wild card in the first, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. So players you might want to consider in that realm, or in that range, excuse me. Players to avoid, these are just players that, for whatever reason, we don't think are going to be top performers in the fantasy game this year. And then players to keep an eye on. So these are people who are either coming back from an injury or maybe they're, you know, a new transfer to the EPL this season. Or just a player that you were not quite sure. The record is a little spotty, right?
In some of the teams I scouted, I think I have a single player that you both should buy, avoid, and keep an eye on all at the same time.
So let's talk about, okay, so I have a list of players to buy here, and I'm going to work backwards from this list because I think there's really one player who stands out, but I want to talk about him last. So
build the suspense. I like
build
it.
The suspense. So there are a few options. There are a ton of, I mean, we could spend like a whole podcast just talking about Man City's options this year. So we got Leroy Sané, 8.5 million. Per the Fantasy Football Scout, I like to credit our sources when I have a source to credit.
Sure.
He averaged 4.8 points per match from game week 22 on after he finally earned a regular role in the squad.
That's really impressive.
And anyone who actually watched City play last year knows how impressive Sané is. I mean, he's really active. He's a pretty good finisher. He, you know, links up well with the rest of the players. The concern here is that he's been a little bit in and out of the squad in the preseason. Now, that could just be, hey, maybe his minutes managed, but in the last two friendly appearances, he's only played about 10 minutes in each of the last two games. And these are pretty important games where you'd expect him to play some more minutes.
Well, I would say I watched much of the Man City-Real Madrid match, and it was all 13-year-olds out there playing. It was yeah, like a kid's match.
But the Spurs game, too, he didn't play very long.
Yeah, I agree. It is at once concerning, but it sometimes is hard to read too much into that, what the playing time means in the preseason. It's strange you compare Man City's lineups that they put out to a team that we're going to talk about shortly, like Spurs, where Pochettino is effectively playing his entire regular starting 11 for entire 90 right. minutes. Matches.
I do agree that it's hard to know for sure, but the concern is if you bring in Leroy Sané, he's probably like your second midfielder, possibly your third midfielder. And do you want to start? I'm a little more risk averse in general, so you know, take it with a grain of salt. But sorry, I don't know if you can hear the like very loud blue jay outside my window right now.
You are an amateur ornithologist, Josh. So
that's true. I probably shouldn't have recorded this podcast under a tree. So do I want my second midfielder or possibly third midfielder to be a player who I don't know is going to actually start, right? I mean,
his price alone at 8.5, I think you're exactly right. This is such a competitive price range, particularly if who we talked about last week with Liverpool, where they're stacked. I mean, assuming Coutinho is still playing game week one in the league, and then you have guys like Salah and Mane when he's healthy again, and then all the way into the somewhat affordable Spurs midfielders of Ali and Eriksen.
Right.
8.5 right. starts butting up against that price bracket in your midfield.
It's kind of a great price in that way because it's low enough that it really tempts you, but high enough that it almost puts you into that, like you said, into that kind of Spurs bracket. You're like, well, for 1 million more, for you know, for 0.5 million more, I can have Coutinho. You know, and is that really, you know, a player I'd want instead of Sané? I mean, to me, that's kind of like a no-doubter.
Do you want to go 0.5 less? We're going to talk about Manchester United after this. Obviously, people know their alphabet.
Right.
But a guy like Mkhitaryan is on a lot of people's radar.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll talk about him in a second. So the thing about Sané is he's, and I have him in the players to buy section because if we feel confident that he's a regular starter in this squad, and there's always a little bit of rotation with the Pep squad, then if we think he's a regular player, then he is probably going to deliver, you know, really solid points per minute, really going to be worthwhile in your team. So maybe he's a hold until the first wildcard kind of player.
All right, that's enough Sané talk, Josh. Who's next?
All right, the next one I'm going to take is a duo, Brandon. We've got Gabriel Jesus, 10.5 million, 7 goals, 4 assists, and 10 appearances last year. And the man himself, Sergio Aguero, who we've not talked about very often on this podcast. I'd say we spend a good 15% of every podcast talking about Sergio Aguero, at least, you know, till this season. So it's a big change so far. He's 11.5 million. He was number one in the Premier League for both total attempts and shots in the box last year. 23 goals and 9 assists, but he, you know, kind of lost his spot at times last year. And I don't think we go into the season knowing for sure that he is a regular starter in this squad.
It's a hard situation to read. And yeah, I think the narrative around Jesus, when he finally became available to Pep, we saw this heavy rotation. Now, Aguero was in and out of the side because of, you know, red card bans and some injury per usual.
Right.
But there was a sense around the league that for whatever reason, he was getting pushed out. The fact that Aguero is still happy and around and seeing a pretty decent preseason minutes gives me pause. And I still can't see any reason why Pep would give up on a striker as classy as Sergio Aguero.
That's true. Although they did play together, I'd say the last five or six game weeks last year, they did play together. They both did perform. So, but they didn't perform, like neither one really ran away with it. I felt like, I'm not even sure if you're a Man City fan, you're probably cringing right now, but I'm going to ask the question anyways. And I'm not sure that they are a better squad with both of them starting. Like, it may not be that they complement each other's skills well enough.
Yeah, it remains to be seen because there are a handful of new signings that are coming into this midfield that could shake things up and make it a bit more dynamic playing these two strikers up front. So.
And have they played together in the preseason so far? I don't think they've started a match together as a duo up front. So this creates the dilemma, though, right? It's just like Leroy Sané. We know that one of these two players will start. In any given game week, one of the two of them is going to start. Will they start together? It's not clear. And so I think I'm a little nervous about having one of these two players in my squad at the start of the season, because even though they're away, right? They're away to Brighton Hove Albion in game week one. They're home to Everton in game week two, away to Bournemouth in game week three. And they play Watford and Crystal Palace a couple weeks after that. So it's a very good start to the season, and you really do need some City coverage, but it's just there's all these kind of red flags around these players.
Prediction time, Josh. At the end of the season, coming into game week 38, who has the higher point total, Jesus or Aguero, or is it a wash?
I think it'll be Jesus because I think he'll stay healthier than Aguero.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I kind of lean towards it'll be a wash, but yeah, the injury question is a good one.
So we talk about all this risk, and this is why I wanted to leave the last kind of attacking player in the players to buy section. That's Kevin De Bruyne. And Kevin De Bruyne is, you know, he's in a ton of teams right now, and it's kind of almost by default because he's the one player who, not by default, he's earned his 10 million price tag, but he's the one player who I think everyone feels very confident is going to be starting, you know, the vast majority of the game weeks. He led the Premier League with 21 assists last season. He did have a big drop in shots on target, so it's not clear if that's kind of a change. I mean, we know he can score, and he's often on free kicks. But, you know, I think that there's a hope, I think, that he'll start to score a little more this year, and that maybe it was he was getting used to Pep's style or something like that. So I think that he is, I mean, he led the team in touches in the final third. He led the team in chances created. Led the team in minutes per chances created. So he's kind of filling up all the stats, and they have this good run of fixtures. And so it makes it very compelling, I think, to bring in De Bruyne.
And I think you're talking about rotation risk a lot with Manchester City. De Bruyne seems to be one of the players in the team that has the most unique skill set.
Right, right.
Like, who else does quite precisely what De Bruyne does? Now, Jesus and Aguero play the striker role in somewhat different fashion.
Right.
But they are kind of interchangeable if you're playing just as a lone striker. But
David De Bruyne, David Silva kind of had that role, but now he's, you know, his minutes have to be managed more carefully given his advancing age, which is like 3 years younger than I am. All right, so speaking of attacking edge, okay, that's like a bad transition, but I'm just going to keep talking anyway.
Go with it, man.
My final player to buy is all these new defenders on Man City, but the player I'm advocating to buy in the defense is Vincent Kompany, 6 million, you know, very affordable price for Vincent Kompany. He had 3 goals and 5 clean sheets in 11 matches last season. You know, the problem with him is that he never stays healthy, but, you know, I think at the start of a season, when you've got that wild card in your pocket, you know, he's going to be a very easy player to move. There are a lot of good 6 million options, a lot of good 5.5 million options. Really good run of fixtures, good chance of keeping some clean sheets. I think Kompany is the defender that I would bring in.
He's already in my draft squad.
Is that right? Oh, yeah, he's in your draft squad. Oh, right, yeah.
Well, yeah, not my initial FPL draft squad, right, but like the hashtag draft squad.
It's very confusing.
Not that we don't need to get into all that.
So what do you think about?
I like this group of players.
Okay, good. So players to avoid, and I don't know. I don't know if you're going to agree with me on all this or not. But
okay, yeah, let's see.
The first bullet I've got here is, you know, possibly this kind of flies in the face of my Kompany argument, but it's possibly all defenders to start the season. I mean, they're integrating, you know, a new left back and a new right back. I mean, I know Kyle Walker has, you know, played in the Premier League for many years, but it is a little worrisome, right? I mean, they didn't keep a lot of clean sheets last season. And it feels a little risky.
It does, and these new other backs, Danilo and Mendy, both really class guys, but it's unsure if Mendy is going to be right in because he's suffering from a bit of a knock, and right. Danilo feels like he was brought in as a backup, so you would expect to see some trial period there where people are getting runs out to see how they fit in with the squad. But Kyle Walker might be the safest bet apart from Vincent Kompany.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, from what I read, he really linked up well with the rest of the squad in that big. I mean, I don't want to make too big of a deal of the City Spurs friendly match. I mean, it was, you know, it's this preseason game. You know, no one's quite in, you know, it's not the regular season, right? It's a preseason match. But he did play well. And I think he's probably a good fit for that squad, but I think you're really counting on assists more than you're counting on clean sheets with him early on.
Yeah, I would agree. Watching him against Real Madrid, he looked a little nervous. He had some poor touches, but I do like Kyle Walker, but 6.5 compared to lots of other wingback options that we're going to talk about throughout this podcast, it's up for debate.
It's really, I mean, that's the same price as Azpilicueta and... you know, a ton of really, you know, I mean, all of the Spurs, you know, defenders are cheaper than that. So, I think I would at least be a little cautious with my, I don't think I'd go in and like a double up on my City defense. Even if you were, you know, really excited about this team, I wouldn't bring in like Ederson and Walker.
Now I see you've got Ederson listed here under do not buy. You've got some strong feelings here.
Well, I just feel like, you know, as we saw last year, I mean, Man City is going to have the ball a lot. I'm not feeling super confident in their ability to keep clean sheets, at least at the start of the season. And I don't see him getting a lot of save opportunities. So I just think at 5.5 million, I would rather have, you know, one of those 5 million keepers. I'd rather have Fraser Forster or Tom Heaton or something like that. I just think I'm going to get more points out of those players.
Yeah, I gave you a sneak peek at my team over the weekend, and I had Ederson in there, and I've been I kind of got fixated on this idea that Manchester City is going to come in game week one as the league juggernaut, right. And why not just find a way into these clean sheets? But I think you're probably right, and watching him in some of these preseason matches, he does look very young. He's trying to find his
shaky moments, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, so it's... I would move him into the wait and see. I mean, it certainly depends on your goalkeeping philosophy, if you're a rotator or if you just like to do a set and forget.
Yeah.
But I agree.
Well, I think we should move on from City, but I just the last player I have, maybe it's it might be too harsh to have in the players to avoid category, but Bernardo Silva at 8 million, joined from Monaco in the offseason. He had eight goals and 11 assists and 37 appearances for them last year, but I don't know that he's a starting player on this squad at this time. I think that he's more of a rotation player. I don't expect him to get consistent minutes, and I think your money could be spent better elsewhere.
So let's jump to Manchester United. And they also have a great opening run of fixtures: West Ham, Swansea, Leicester, Stoke, and then Everton in the first five. I'm going to take the opposite approach of you, Josh. I'm just going to start with the big elephant in the room, the 48.2% owned Romelu Lukaku. Just incredible, intense ownership. And we can have that debate of, do you have to have Lukaku just because everyone else does and you don't want to be left behind? It depends on how people split up their team with Harry Kane, but
the problem about Lukaku, or the problem with not having Lukaku, is, you know, there's this temptation not to have him because there's like, I don't know, I guess this like kind of slight, you know, game theory argument or something that like, I mean, you know, I think it's reasonable not to captain him in a lot of these matches. I don't know that he's going to be, you know, I think that, you know, someone like Kane or even obviously, you know, Aguero or any of the City players could outscore him in a given game week. But to not have him on your team, just given, you know, given his track record of success, given that he's moving to a squad that's going to be more capable of delivering him goals, right? He's never really had a midfield before. I mean, this guy has basically been on an Everton team without a particularly strong midfield. Before that, I mean, he was on, you know, West Brom. I mean, you know, sure. So he's never really had a squad that surrounded him like this. And you're seeing it in the preseason with him just scoring, you know, in every match practically. So I think that, you know, he's just too good not to own, you know, and he's been this way despite his Trollkaku reputation. I mean, you know, part of that is because he's been on a lot of teams that basically had nothing to play for come March, you know, and I don't think he's ever had a team that could actually win the league before. He's never been on a team that could actually win the league before. So I think, the question I have is whether he can actually get above like 65% ownership. Like could two thirds of the players actually play in the fantasy game, have him in their squad?
Yeah. I mean, I think we can get there if he scores a hat trick against West Ham. Right. At Old Trafford the opening week, and then I think we can get to 65.
I wonder, like, in the last 5 years, what the single highest ownership has been for a player. I mean, because you have to start out at a pretty high level to begin with, right, just given the attrition rate. Like, you've got to be on, like, you know, Man United, like, you know, probably the largest fan base in the world, right? So just off the bat, any striker in that squad is going to have a big ownership. But then, you know, it's everything he's done, you know, with Everton, everything he's done in the preseason, everything that everyone and all these podcasts and blogs is writing about. Even if you're not playing the game that seriously, he's a player you want to have in your squad.
All right, let's put a marker down. Is Lukaku in your squad game week one?
He has to be.
Yeah. So Lukaku is actually the only player I listed as to buy on Manchester United. There is a lot of wait and see with this squad. I mean, things are actually getting really interesting. The signing of Nemanja Matic, which happened today, the day we're recording, is totally throwing the whole discussion of Paul Pogba into a tailspin, because everyone thinks, well, does bringing Matic in push Pogba up forward, and does Pogba suddenly become more of an FPL asset than he had been before?
Right.
So, Sure. So going to players to keep an eye on, I have Paul Pogba here, and the Matic signing does change the way we look at him, but can he really perform farther forward? Now, you pulled some stats for us here.
Well, just I have joked on recent podcasts that Paul Pogba can't shoot. And, you know, I had some moment recently where I was like, you know, I better actually check and see if that's true. And I mean, he's certainly scored more, you know, he was a pretty decent goal scorer when he was at Juventus. I mean, I think, you know, 2 years ago, I think he had 13 goals and 9 assists, his final season there. But last year, he only converted 5.4% of his chances. The thing is, he actually led the team with 57 key passes, But he only picked up 4 assists from those passes. And part of that was just a reflection of not having enough players who are converting. You know, they just, it was a bit of bad luck for him not to have more assists. But the goal scoring was, you know, he hit the bar, I think, 5 times last year. So it's a little bit like, remember when Luis Suarez was like not like when Luis Suarez was first in the league, yep. He yep. was not I quite remember. As good a fantasy asset as he used to, as he should have been, because
a lot of woodwork.
Yeah, a ton of woodwork. So, but then his last couple seasons, you know, I guess he just, I don't know, improved his accuracy, got better, got luckier, whatever it was. And suddenly he was kind of a must-own player. So I'm slightly like coming around on Pogba. I mean, what do you think?
So I actually believe that Henrik Mkhitaryan is going to be the breakout midfielder here for Manchester United. His game is just slightly different than Paul Pogba's. I feel like Mkhitaryan is more more of a forward influence. Same price tag, 8.0. He has much lower ownership thus far leading into game week 1 at 5.5. I don't know if it's silly to call Mkhitaryan a differential, but if you're looking to invest in Manchester United attacking assets in addition to Lukaku, I think Mkhitaryan would be where I would go. Now,
yeah, so what do we define as let's just be, you know, it's early on in the season still, and what do you think we would define as a differential? That is a player who you know, whose ownership is low enough that if he really performs, it's a chance for you to, you know, kind of have an edge on your opponents.
Is right. It well, it's less than
10%.
No, I would say even lower than that. I mean, if we're comparing somebody to Paul Pogba, then sure, less than 10% mm-hmm. becomes a differential, and I think Mkhitaryan is right there. But like, when you start talking about real midfield differentials, I think you're talking about your third and fourth midfielders sure, sure. as opposed to guys in this price bracket and Kevin De Bruyne's price bracket.
Your Pascal Grosses, for example.
Yeah. Sure, exactly. The grosser, the better. So that's why I think this question is actually pretty compelling, as we're saying. We've got two guys who kind of played different key attacking roles in the Manchester United midfield with Mkhitaryan and Pogba. It could really make or break your side if both of these guys start scoring points.
Yeah, I guess I'm just going to have to wait and see on both of them. I wish the Mkhitaryan was a little cheaper. I'm kind of surprised he's still 8 million, given that he didn't really do anything last year, right? He was in Mourinho's doghouse the first half of the season, and then he played good for a few weeks, and then he got injured, and it's kind of in and out of the squad. I mean, if he was like 7 million or 7.5, I'd be all over him. But some reason, 8, just like, it seems a little too high for me.
Well, here he is, Josh, in our keep an eye on category. True. I'm not telling you to buy him right out of the gate. Right. Another guy to keep an eye on, Victor Lindelof. He is the defender of choice right now, 11.7 ownership. New to the league, 23-year-old Swedish central defender from Benfica. He's not known for scoring goals. He scored 2 goals, I think, in his last few seasons there at Benfica. But you're comparing him to the rest of the Manchester United defense. At 5.5, he does seem like a reasonably priced way in if he becomes nailed on. Right. And this is what Jose Mourinho teams are known for, clean sheets, playing very solidly at the back. And you expect Mourinho to try and settle on a back four. I think the wing backs are probably a little bit more up for debate at the moment.
Yeah.
You would expect Lindelof and Baye would be the two.
I would think so. I know Lindelof has not played well in preseason, and I know that a lot of Man United fans are kind of tearing their hair out about it, but I do think he's going to lock down that spot. I mean, they spent a fair amount of money on him. A couple of preseason games don't tell you everything, so... all right, well, let's run through the players to avoid here, Brandon. Maybe quickly, because we're already like...
Oh, yeah, sure. So Marcus Rashford and Anthony Martial, 7.5 and 8.0 respectively. The cost is just too high for the rotation risk associated, and it's a pretty crowded midfield. Rashford is a striker by FPL standards, but his role in the team has just never been consistent enough for me. I think there is some temptation given his, you know, exploits with England and when United really needed a goal.
Right.
He was there for them many times last season, but I'm not sold. David De Gea, going back to our discussion of the defense, if you really want somebody that's nailed on, David De Gea could just be an easy way in. He's already at 28% ownership.
That is extraordinary.
At 5.5, Yeah, it's really
intense.
I can't
believe that. I'm going to have to bring in a Man United defender just to counter the De Gea ownership. My God, there's so many Man United fans. It forced you to play so much defense. You got to have your coverage.
But again, we have to remind you at 5.5, that big of an ownership, if Manchester United goes 3 weeks without keeping a clean sheet, his price tag is going to take a pretty quick and significant ding, and you're going to have to sell him right away. Yeah. So it's a goalkeeper philosophy thing.
Yeah, it's unlikely though, right? Given their start, I mean, West Ham, Swansea, Leicester, Stoke. It's a pretty solid first four games.
Yeah, definitely. I think it comes down to if you're investing in a Manchester United defender, you don't want De Gea. But if you don't have a Manchester United defender, maybe find an extra 0.5. Give it a try.
Yeah, and look at Bailly, right? He's 6 million. So yeah, interesting. Yeah.
And just a friendly public service announcement: do not bring Nemanja Matic into your FPL squad. Don't be fooled. Don't be fooled by that tremendous goal he scored against Spurs in the cup.
Yeah, he was a sneaky assist man, but yeah, I agree. All right, Brandon, Newcastle. We've moved on. Now those are the two squads that needed a lot of coverage. I think we'll move to the next couple of these a little more quickly. Newcastle promoted last year, still led by Rafa Benitez. To note about Benitez is he's kind of known for a lot of rotation. I think it makes, especially the players who run a lot, right? So the left back and the right back are two players that I'd be a little worried about the consistency of their starts. And I think that, okay, so I actually asked Ben Dinnery a question on Twitter this afternoon. I was curious, who he thought the player most assured of starts was. And it was kind of a mixed bag, actually. And I think he sort of was talking about a couple different players, and he was sort of dependent on, he thinks like they need like five more signings, basically. So we'll see what happens there. The one player they did, okay, so let's talk about players to buy on Newcastle before I get too caught up in my own words here. We have Elliot, the goalkeeper. Is it Rob Elliot?
Of Rob Elliot's Punch-Out fame?
That's right. Rob Elliot, who was on he was the starting keeper at the end of the season when Newcastle went down. He is 4 million, and by all accounts, it looks like he is going to be the starting keeper for Newcastle. And a 4 million starting keeper, Brandon, is really the dream for any fantasy manager. Especially given that they have a pretty decent run of fixtures to start the season. They play Spurs in game week one, which I think is kind of throwing everybody off because you just don't want to have it's something about that game week one squad. You always want to have players that just have badass matchups
it's
across the board.
All killer, no filler. Even the goalkeeper that you're not even going to start has to have a great matchup. Exactly.
But after Spurs, they play Huddersfield, West Ham, Swansea, Stoke, and Brighton. The West Ham game and the Stoke game are both home. It's a pretty darn good run of fixtures after the Spurs game. So Elliott at 4 million is a goalkeeper you really could start. And I'm thinking pretty seriously about an Elliott rotation with Fraser Forster right now for my squad. I'm not feeling the Ben Foster love right now. So.
Yeah, I'm with you.
The other defender that I'm looking at is Florian Lejeune, or perhaps it's Lejeune. I have not heard his name.
I see no accent aigu there, Josh, so I'll stick with Lejeune. He's in the Capoue camp until we're told otherwise.
He is a newly signed center back, and he's been very impressive in preseason. He's priced at 4.5 million, as I think all of their defenders are. You also have DeAndre Yedlin, who had 5 assists and 21 starts last year. He had the best successful tackle rate of any promoted defender, so he could be a great bonus point magnet. But the problem is, I think there's going to be some rotation with him, and it's not even clear that he's going to be a starter from game week one on. And I think that I would exercise a lot of caution when it comes to bringing Yedlin in. I just don't know that he's going to be a starter at the start of the season.
Which pains us to no end as great American homers.
Yeah, exactly. So if Florian Lejeune is a little too risky for you, I think Jamal Lasalle is the other player that I would look at. He's also a center back. He had 41 starts last season, so consistent start record. He had 3 goals and 1 assist. He's been recovering from hernia surgery, but I did a little research this week, Brandon, and I actually read multiple articles and listened to a Newcastle podcast. So
Really, I thought you were going to say you were exploring the Journal of the American Medical Association, learning all about hernias.
that would have been amazing. I even read the player ratings for their Mines friendly match. So anyway, LaSalle actually didn't play in that, but Benitez said that he looks set to recover by game week one. So I think he'll slot right in if he's back. And 3 goals and 1 assist is pretty solid return for a central defender. So you know, obviously you're not going to get the attacking threat that you get from the fullbacks, but I think that might be a little less risky. So the player that I would also consider, there's actually two. One is Matt Ritchie. Actually, I'll take them together because they're kind of in the same category. You have Matt Ritchie at $6 million and Dwight Gayle at $6.5 million. And I'm grouping them together because they both stunk in the Premier League. Now, Matt Ritchie came up, and I know this from personal experience because I had Matt Ritchie in my starting team 2 years ago.
Sure, Bournemouth.
And he was like the only midfielder on that team who was not scoring goals. And I think everybody had him. He was like the hottest midfield option to have. And his price, he dropped like 0.7 million or something like that in the first few weeks. But he went back down to the championship and he had 12 goals and 7 assists. Competitively priced at $6 million. So, whether you think his experience with Bournemouth is indicative of how he's going to play in the Premier League, I kind of do, and it kind of makes me less likely to bring him in, I have to say.
We could put him in that Rob Brady category of Robbie Brady, I should say, category right. of Matt Ritchie will have one, maybe 1.5 great FPL moments this season, and right. we'll cap it at that.
Dwight Gayle is a little more expensive at 6.5. I mean, he certainly earned it. He had 23 goals and 26 starts in the championship. I feel like when I was looking at the championship last year and during the regular season, anytime you saw a match report, it was like 2 goals from Gayle, 3 goals from Gayle. He really played well in the championship. But when he played for Crystal Palace, he was definitely a rotation player, not a consistent starter. And so again, it's kind of like Ritchie. Did he need someone like Benitez to bring out the best in him, or is it that he kind of found his level and that for whatever reason the style of the championship, which is kind of funny actually, because the championship is a slightly more physical league, and I don't think of Gayle as a particularly physical player.
He's got a pretty small frame.
Yeah, but for whatever reason, he really did perform well there. Maybe he was faster than the other players. So I think that he's a little bit of a risk. But he could have like a Charlie Austin type season too. I could see him like just really being a consistent attacker for Newcastle. Although I still think they're probably going to bring in another forward. I mean, they seem like a squad that's due for a couple more big moves not before the season, but before the end of the transfer window.
I guess there's been a few headlines over the course of the summer of Benitez not being happy with the amount of money he's gotten to make his signings. So, I mean, maybe that's just all smoke to cover up the fact that they're taking longer than they hoped to make their signings, and there's just right. going to be a flood of them.
Right, right. Yeah, it's possible. But actually, the podcast I listened to today made it seem like they kind of spent some of that money last year. Remember, they kind of went on a big spending spree as they were going out of the championship, and they brought in all of these Premier League level players.
Including Andros Townsend.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and Jonjo Shelvey.
Speaking of Premier League level talent, we've seen this guy before.
Exactly. Speaking of players to avoid, Jonjo, $5.5 million, 5 goals and 8 assists last year. I mean, Jonjo can absolutely crush a ball. He's like Charlie Adam. You know, every now and then, Jonjo will just destroy a ball. And
there is nothing sweeter than seeing a guy like that just look like he's going to explode the inflatable balloon inside of the ball. It's really incredible.
So I kind of like Jonjo. I like that he sort of leans into the Voldemort jokes.
Sure.
But I also...
And his goal celebration where he makes little eyeglasses around his eyes.
Yeah, exactly. But he's verbally explosive. He tends to get a lot of yellow cards and red cards. And he's a player who, like, if you're going to bring him into your team, just get ready for, like, a total yellow card brigade because you're going to get a million of them this season.
He seems moody.
He does seem moody.
Josh, I feel like you did an amazing job with the Magpie section.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you.
I hope that prepared our listeners for the terrible job that I'm about to do with Southampton.
Okay, let's go.
Southampton, who have an incredible blue streak heading into the first 5 game weeks, hosting 2 home matches right out of the gate, Swansea, West Ham, then Huddersfield, Watford, Crystal Palace. not too shabby. Southampton also, of course, it wouldn't be the start of a new season if they didn't also have a new manager.
Right, right.
They have a long history with Argentinians named Mauricio, so here we are with Pellegrino. I really don't know much about his tactical acumen, but I pulled some of his historical managerial stats. They're not glowing. He only had one managerial season with Independiente where he finished with a win percentage above 50%. But Southampton seemed to know how to pick them. They That's always true. Had good luck with their managers. That's they true. Often go on to do fantastic things, as we saw with Pochettino. And I'm blanking on Everton manager's name right now. The Dutch large-headed
Koeman.
Man.
Yep,
Koeman. So I wouldn't read a whole lot into that.
The Claude Puel year was just—it was a boring year, and I think that everyone was sad about losing Sadio Mane, and Charlie Austin got injured, and it was just not could have been that season should have been more fun.
So looking at this incredible run of fixtures, I think there's a lot that we don't know. There are a lot of unknowns in Southampton's attack. I mean, there are players that we know, and we know their history, but the sure thing I think is possible clean sheets, and they have two really bankable wingbacks with Cedric Suarez and Ryan Bertrand. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Is it apples and oranges here, or is it the same thing with Cedric and Bertrand?
Well, I mean, Cedric, I think, is the player you want long term. I think there's a bit of an injury concern with him right now, though. I think that there's a chance he's not going to actually start. He's not going to be able to start at the beginning of the season. He might miss a game or two. So I guess that's enough to turn me off Cedric. And so that kind of turns me towards Bertrand or maybe Maya Yoshida. I mean, he just scored a goal in a friendly over the weekend. Yoshida, you know, that guy was like the fantasy darling the second half of last year.
Well, it was Yoshida and Stevens.
Jack Stevens,
They were both, I think, priced at 4.5. And then through a series of events, it was Fonte going to West Ham and also Virgil van Dijk's injury that brought these guys to the fore. And now both of them priced at 5.0. I think you need to avoid both of these center backs just by virtue of how enticing the wing backs are. I think there's so much more upside to Bertrand and Suarez, or Cedric Suarez.
Yeah, but I mean, if you needed to save that 0.5 and it comes out that Cedric is not starting the season, I guess Maya Yoshida is probably the safer bet over, between Yoshida and Stevens. I guess I'd go Yoshida.
Let's just round out the guys to avoid. Nathan Redmond, mostly just because nobody really likes Nathan Redmond. He had a rough summer where he missed a PK in the U21. Was it that the World Cup for U21 or something like that?
Yep.
But here he is. He's already sitting at 10.3% ownership. How do you explain that one?
I don't know. I mean, I must be English fans, right? Like players who like him. And I mean, he didn't earn it last year. You know, it certainly was. He was a very disappointing player.
You started with Redmond in your squad last year. I think he had a certain amount of hype moving from Norwich.
I got a goal in his first match, and then it was a whole lot of nothing for about 10 weeks.
Yeah, I just think that there is so much more that you can find at 6.5 around the league that Nathan Redmond just move along. So it's just like a mess of players attacking for Southampton that I really don't know what to tell you other than just keep an eye on him.
Yeah,
there's a lot of Tadic talk happening online right now, but he's just a continual FPL troll.
Yeah, he really is.
We cannot look beyond that fact. It's always Tadic is on the verge. But that said, 6.5, it's still a viable price tag for you to take a gamble. It's a new manager. It's a new start. You just never know when Tadic is going to find his form. And when he does, he's pretty spectacular.
He is, but it's such a gamble, you know. It's like putting like money on roulette or something. Like you just don't know if it's, you know, like if you hit, it's amazing. But the making sure like you get the right week, it's impossible. James Ward-Prowse is someone that sticks out to me here, and I know you've got him on your list. 5.5 million. I think he's pretty assured of starting this season. Given their fixtures, he kind of profiles as a really good fourth midfield option.
He is one of those players I feel like we have all collectively just watched grow up through the FPL game.
Yeah, it's like kind of like Raheem Sterling.
Yeah, definitely. Like somebody who becomes just a Band-Aid on your FPL team a couple seasons ago to a guy that you're starting to hear chatter about. Hey, listen, when he comes onto the field, he's actually taking corner kicks right. to the point where he's a set piece specialist. He looks like he's on the verge of just a regular starting spot in this team. Yeah. 5.5, that's pretty good.
To the point that he finally gets sold to Liverpool. You know, it's the career arc of every great Southampton player.
Yeah. All right, now let's talk quickly about the striker situation at Southampton. I mean, Gabby Adini and Charlie Austin, these were two very different stories last season. Right. Gabby Adini burned everyone during that stretch of double game weeks, mm-hmm. even though he was really hot on fire when he came into Southampton. Right. And then Charlie Austin, who everybody loves, mm-hmm. but he got injured. Do you, yep. It's a matter of who plays and how
they
play.
Yeah, I mean, Gabby Adini, I think he just scored a goal in a friendly. I think he's more likely to be the starter. Yeah, it's hard for me to get over what he did to my team at the end of last season. Sure. He might have like literally,
you did, Manolo.
Yeah, he might have like literally cost me hundreds of dollars. So it's it's hard to shake that off. I will be objective. I mean, again, it's. Given these fixtures, you might need to take a risk on one of these midfield players. I mean, even someone like Nathan Redmond, as much as we were just, kind of talking him down. I mean, just someone. I mean, maybe it is Tadic, right? Maybe it's just somebody who is capable of huge returns. I mean, just that, you know, they're home to Swansea, they're home to West Ham, they're away to Huddersfield, they're home to Watford, and they're away to Crystal Palace in the first five games. Every single one of those games is a game where they could score multiple goals. And games where they can keep a clean sheet too. I mean, they could you know, Southampton could be top of the table after five game weeks.
It's true. For as much as I'm kind of like glossing over all these attacking options, it's guaranteed there will be many goals in the first five game weeks. Yeah. So take a shot, take a stab at it.
All right, if you had to just take one midfielder, or one forward, just price is irrelevant. Which one would you take?
I think here I go Ward-Prowse and Gabby Adini. And maybe that's just me trying to figure out a good package proposal that I can bring to my boss. Like, hey, look, right. I saved you money with Ward-Prowse.
Right, right.
I do have this feeling, though, that Tadic is frankly the sexier option here.
I think I'd pick Ward-Prowse, though, too, mostly because it allows me to have a Southampton player for these fixtures. And it gives me, you know, an affordable fourth midfield option. And I think there's a decent chance he's going to get some attacking points. And it doesn't take up, I don't really want to even put 6.5 million into one of these Southampton players, at least not until, you know, and we're farther into the season or even like two or three game weeks in. And we just have a better sense of who's actually starting in this squad and, you know, how far up everyone's positioned. And so, you know, it's just a little like, it feels a little unsettled, this team right now.
All right, in light of all this talk of Southampton, I think we have to go back and talk further about Ryan Bertrand.
Okay.
So, I think you're really kind of you're convincing me that this start is so great for them, and there's just a huge upside for Ryan Bertrand. I think he might be worth, really, really worth the 5.5 to start in your squad.
Well,
I think in a heartbeat I'd take him over my Yoshida at this point.
Yeah, you could be right. And I don't even think we've mentioned Fraser Forster yet. I mean, that's a player who is kind of locked into my team right now. I mean, I just love Forster at 5 million to start the season. I mean, Forster and Elliott, that's 9 million. You know, it's the equivalent of two 4.5 million keepers and I actually don't even plan to play Elliott. I'm just going to play, you know, Forster five game weeks in a row.
How tall, if Rob Elliott is standing on Fraser Forster's shoulders, mm-hmm. is that as tall as me, you think?
No, I think it's 3 meters tall, Brandon.
Right, I love you're on the metric system.
I don't even know how tall that is. I don't know meters.
What's the ownership percentage on Fraser Forster right now? I'm trying to take the pulse of everyone's interest out there.
I can tell. I know. I feel like you've not thought as deeply as I have about this Southampton team. It's really
6.8% out there. Yes. People taking Forster.
Exactly. And Cedric to me. I mean, Cedric actually doesn't have a. He's not flagged anymore, but I
haven't heard any of this injury news that you have, Josh, about Cedric.
Forgive me if I'm completely wrong out there, listeners, because I thought I heard something. And, you know, who knows? Maybe there's a Cedric.
Can't be too careful.
Maybe there's a Cedric in the Portuguese league that I read about my mistake, and I'm just totally.
Were you actually reading your comedy blog about Cedric the Entertainer?
That's what it is. Cedric the Entertainer has a sprained elbow, and he's going to miss a couple gigs. Brandon, let's move on to Stoke City.
Okay, let's do it.
All right.
The Potters.
Pottermost.
What's their start look like?
I should be listing all their. I actually know the mascots for all these clubs, so I should be listing them off.
Yeah,
as
you
we
are
go.
A mascot. So Pottermost.
Pottermost, yep, exactly. Like, and it's a hippo, like so a it's, like, it's like hippo. Yeah, exactly. Right. Players to buy, no one. Here's the situation with Stoke City is they have a really difficult start to the season. They play Everton away, and then they play Arsenal, Man United, and Chelsea in three of the following five fixtures. And then even then, their way to West Brom and Newcastle, neither of which are particularly great fixtures either. They have not bought anyone, at least anyone of note, and they lost Marko Arnautovic, and the team is getting old. I mean, it's just it's a little bit like what happened to Swansea last year, where you're like, are you guys not going to make any moves? Like, is this what's happening?
Jonathan Walters kind of looks like Gandalf the White at this point. He's just a very ancient-looking man.
He is, and Peter Crouch, I mean, he's still, like, getting serious minutes for them, so... I wouldn't recommend buying anyone in this team. The players that I would particularly avoid are Jack Butland, who was once great fantasy keeper, but he is sadly overpriced at $5 million. I really have no idea why he's priced at $5 million. I mean, he didn't even play last year. You know, he had this knee injury, and the team isn't any good. So that seems like an overprice. And Kurt Zuma, who's also who would be an interesting option, maybe at least long term, but he's still priced like a Chelsea player.
What a ludicrous price tag, 5.5. That's insane.
It's too bad. Hey, he doesn't really have a lot of goal threat. It's not like he's a an attacking central defender. He's not like a John Terry type or something. So
I dare say, even if he were still at Chelsea, 5.5 would be a criminal price.
He feels a little high. I mean, I guess if he got a starting spot in that squad and he was $5 million, then he'd just be like the most owned player, right? So. Mm-hmm. Players to consider, there's two, and it's funny because my notes are like almost exactly the same for both of them. And you have Shaqiri, Jordan Shaqiri, who is priced at $6 million. His third year in the league. It's actually been pretty disappointing as far as I'm concerned. I mean, came from Bayern Munich, a highly rated player. He plays really well in the Swiss national team. Has not really done anything so far in the league though. 4 goals and 2 assists last year. And you have Joe Allen, who's $5.5 million, was playing farther forward at times last year, kind of in an Etienne Capoue role, and had what we have to call a slightly fluky 6 goals and 3 assists.
Josh, we had some good times last season.
We did have some. In fact, the avatar in our Twitter feed for a very long time was a picture of Joe Allen. So with his Jesus beard. So I wouldn't recommend either one. The reason I even list them as players to consider though, is, I mean, the fixtures will turn around at some point. They're both affordable. Certainly. I mean, yeah, we're talking about, fourth midfielder options right here. And one of them is going to move pretty far forward in Arnautovic's absence. I guess it's going to be Shaqiri. I mean, there's Ramadan Sobhi too, who's kind of an interesting player, but, is too unproven to for anyone to really consider right now. So I think, if I had to guess, it could be, in 6 or 7 weeks, there could be a time when you really want to have someone like Shaqiri, but certainly not at the start of the season. Brandon, you want to take a quick break?
Yeah, let's take a quick break and we'll be back with Swansea.
All right.
Same old podcast, always cheating.
Hello, Josh. We're back from that very long break. are you sitting down?
I am now. I went for a short run, and I'm feeling pretty refreshed now.
Okay. All right, Swansea, dicey fixtures to open up the season. Southampton, Man United, Palace, Newcastle, and then Spurs in game week 5. Players to buy for Swansea. Everybody's favorite fifth midfielder, Tom Carroll, please stand up. Come on down. You're in the team. He suffered from a small amount of rotation at the end of last season, but I think that was just Paul Clement knowing that he needed to conserve some legs for a very pressure-filled run-in for sure. Swans. He's just got a great mind for the sort of for the midfield, and I think he'll be used quite well. I think he got away with something here coming in again at $4.5 million. Yeah.
You love Tom Carroll. It's a long and heated love affair.
I do.
It's
yeah.
A, it's a fear he of also, the heart, Brandon. It really is. Your love of him is a crime of passion. I think we can all agree with that.
Speaking of passionate things, there's also Lucas Fabianski is on my players to buy list. This is a rotational keeper. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a few different options out there, but in terms of keepers that will probably be peppered with shots, collecting save points, Lucas Fabianski could be your man. 5.0 ownership. So Fabianski.
Yeah, I like him too. I'm glad he's a half million cheaper than he's been the last couple seasons. At 5 million, he was just a little too pricey. But at 4.5, I think he's really interesting. But he's a second wild, or not a second wild, he's a first wild card player. So get to this kind of difficult first run of fixtures and then maybe look at Fabianski for your first wild card.
All right, I don't know if this is controversial to say, but I have Gylfi Sigurdsson listed as a player to avoid. I think he's just been priced out as an FPL asset at $8.5 million.
Yep. Agreed.
If he goes to a bigger club, and I mean, bless you, Everton fans, but I'm not even sure him in the Everton midfield will make me a believer. Now, it's debatable.
It's not that
debatable.
We're not a believer. I mean, you know, we all think that Gylfi's a good player, but you know, it's he'll never have. Well, okay. I mean, he's kind of in a perfect situation from a fantasy standpoint right now, right?
Everything will go through Gylfi. That much is sure. I think what's very unclear right now is will they score any goals? Particularly, and we'll talk about this in a second. That Llorente is out.
8.5 is just crazy for a player in a team that's not very good. I mean, he's more expensive than Paul Pogba and Mkhitaryan, and you know, I mean, it's. Like, you know, really, like, you know, attacking players on really good teams are less expensive than him. And I know his returns were great last year, but, I just don't see it. It feels like a huge risk to me.
Yeah, it is FPL saying this is why you can't have nice things. Like, they ruined him, Sigurdsson, because you're right. Like, we do love him as a player. He is
really
one
fun
of the
player.
Great Premier League players of recent memory. Okay, so players to keep an eye on. We have to talk about Tammy Abraham because Fernando Llorente looks like he's definitely going to be out for at least the first two game weeks. So says Paul Clement. He's still suffering from this issue with his arm elbow. So Tammy Abraham looks like he may be nailed on for the first at least two game weeks. Mm-hmm. And priced at 5.5, that's fantastic. He's a young 19-year-old English striker. And one of the many cast of Chelsea loanees out there. He scored 23 goals last year for Bristol City. Now, granted, this is the Bristol City that finished in 17th position in the championship, but still, that is an incredible goal rate in the championship.
All right. Prediction, Brendan. How many weeks do you think Tammy Abraham will be in your team in the full 38-week season? From 0 to 38.
Five. I'll say five.
Okay.
And that will be spread across the entire season.
Okay. I'll say eight. I'm a little more. I'm pretty bullish on Abraham, and I think I was just hearing again. God, I listened to one Newcastle podcast, and it like totally like rocked my world. Apparently, like all this knowledge. But there was some talk that in his clause, like part of his loan agreement is he has to play a set number of matches. It could be like as high as 75% of matches or something like that. So I think that I don't know that he has to start every match, but I do think that he's going to be a regular in that squad. And the question is really whether they're going to play a two-striker formation or even, you know, find a way to put him out wide or something like that when Llorente comes back.
Yeah. The only other player I'll mention is Alfie Mawson, who had a really great end of the season. He scored a couple goals from central defense. At 5.0, I don't like him out of the gate, but if we see something that we like in Swansea and they have a great run of fixtures, then Mawson would be your man.
Okay, yep, I agree. Spurs, Brandon. The thing about Spurs is we all kind of... I feel like it's going to get really redundant to talk about Spurs because if you're listening to this podcast, you've already done a lot of thinking about Spurs. So let's get the obvious one out of the way. They moved Kyle Walker from Spurs over to Man City and install Kieran Trippier not Trippier.
Trippier.
Into the squad. He had 5 assists in limited minutes last season. Super talented young player. He was actually, he was bought from Burnley a couple seasons ago, and he was really good when he played for Burnley. And he's a player that that I rate really highly, that a lot of managers do. His ownership level is starting to climb already. It's kind of frustrating because it feels like all of us kind of like know that he's good, but now once that percentage gets higher, then like every manager who's like coming into the game week before the season starts is like, oh, I guess I should bring in him as well, right? Because his ownership is 60% or whatever.
Yeah.
But I do think that Trippier is a damn near essential player to have in your squad.
I have this theory about him too, where he is just a prolific crosser. It's this right, beautiful bend to the ball shape to every single cross he puts in, and they're going to be playing their home matches at Wembley, which is a famously large pitch. There's going to be a lot of space for people to run in to the box for his crosses, and I do wonder if that's going to improve his odds of getting more and more assists through the season.
If you wanted to be a little more, spend a little bit more money, and I'm not even sure if you're really going to get more attacking points out of this player, but you could look at Toby Alderweireld, who's only $6 million this year, is a little more affordable, has certainly delivered over the years. Last year, he was injured for a stretch, so he wasn't quite as, didn't put up the numbers he did the season before, but the season before that, he was absolutely spectacular. I mean, absolutely one of the, fantasy aside, just one of the best players in the game.
Yep, no doubt about it. No doubt about it, Josh.
No doubt about it. So then we come to the big three, Harry Kane, Christian Eriksen, Dele Alli. Let's talk about Eriksen and Alli first. So everyone seems to have Dele Alli right now. And I'm starting to wonder, and I can't tell if I'm just getting too clever here. I'm starting to wonder, and it was actually that same pitch idea that you were talking about a minute ago.
Yeah.
If Eriksen might be a more interesting option as, not interesting, but as a, they're almost equally worthwhile, right? I mean, you could almost argue for just a double up on those two players.
Yeah, in a sense, and I know we kind of have to talk about it because it's why we post this podcast, but part of me feels like this isn't even worth talking about because
it's so Eriksen, hard to judge. Yeah,
it's hard to judge. It's hard to predict. I think it could go either way. I think the one thing I keep coming back to, and maybe you'll make the same point, is that Dele Alli is just a younger player. His skill set is still growing and being fine-tuned. He will become better over the years. And what does that mean? That means that his points potential is just going to continue to grow.
Yeah, I mean, I think the smart bet is Alli, but I think there's a real argument. And I don't even want to use that differential phrase right now because, you know, going into game week one, you should not be thinking about differential. You should just be thinking about who is going to score the most points, right? I mean, worry about differential options when it's, you know, game week 32 and you're, you know, 67 points behind your mini league leader and you need to find someone who, you know, who no one else owns so you can bring in and, you know, hopefully shoot up the ranks. Start of the season, it's just, who do you think is going to score more points, Eriksen or Alli?
It's a little bit like the opening of the Hunger Games where the whistle blows and you just have to run for the nearest weapon to protect yourself and attack. That's what game week one is.
Do you think that Trippier will be on more free kicks, that he might take some free kicks away from Eriksen? I know that he's a pretty good striker of the ball on a free kick or a corner. So
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, Eriksen kind of has those duties locked down, but if there comes a point where because Eriksen tends to play every single minute of every match ever played in the history of football.
Right.
So there could come a point where he's just like, well, I'll continue to play and be a maestro, but can Trippier take some of these dead balls off of my to-do list?
Right, exactly. And so I do think that Eriksen's also looked really good in the preseason, which is maybe why I'm starting to talk myself into Eriksen a little bit. I'm not sure if I'm going to do it or not. I mean, Dele Alli is my current squad right now, but I have at least thought about, I mean, if Eriksen were 9 million and Alli were 9.5, I'd already have Eriksen in my squad. But then being the same price, it's really tricky.
Yeah, it is. I mean, say this, even though he doesn't score as prolifically as other players, Christian Eriksen does seem to love to score goals.
He does. So. I feel like he got a little unlucky last year too. He actually probably should have had more goals than he did. I actually don't have his conversion rate here, but I wonder if his conversion is a little lower than it maybe could have been.
Okay, Harry Kane. Let's talk about the big man.
Yeah, Kane. Very expensive at $12.5 million this year. Notoriously slow starter. Also, probably the best goal scorer in the league. I mean, the only other player who's close is Lukaku. And 29 goals, 7 assists last season. A little bit backloaded, those goals. I mean, he scored, I think, like, what is it, like 8 goals in the last 2 games.
It was insane.
He was kind of insane. So, but, you know, I mean, just a great season, 33 bonus points too. He does a little bit of everything. I mean, he's, you know, very willing to go back into midfield and pick up the ball and, you know, initiate the play. And he's pretty, I mean, he's the kind of guy who he wants to score goals. I mean, he's selfish, but in a good way, I think. I mean, other than like, I feel like late in the season, he was starting to take free kicks off Eriksen because he was trying to get more goals. And he's not a great free kick taker, certainly not as good as Eriksen is. But the question is he
in
your squad?
It was like Lukaku stole his lunch at some point, and Kane was like, you know what? I'm getting the golden boot.
Exactly. Let's do this. We're not going to win the league. Give me the golden boot. So is he in your squad in game week one?
Well, to me, the bigger question is, do you have to make a choice between Harry Kane and Romelu Lukaku, or is it essential to have both of them? For me right now, I'm trying to work out my squad with just Lukaku and no Harry Kane. But Nick Cummings over at the transfer hub site, triggerlips.com, had a post about Harry Kane today saying, well, how is Kane not essential to everyone's FPL squad? It's kind of insane that everyone is acting like maybe we can get away without having him.
Right. Yeah.
It's just that the price tag is such a hurdle.
It is. And I mean, it really, if it didn't totally screw off like all your squad balance, it'd be really tempting to just have like a 37 million mid front line, right? With like, you know,
like Kane, Aguero, and Lukaku.
Yeah, Kane, or maybe, you know, Kane, Lukaku, and Firmino, or something like that. But I think you could actually go. I don't know. I guess we need to talk. Well, in our game week one preview, we'll talk about this a little more. But I feel like I need to think a little more about what forward, like what sub 7 million forward, I feel comfortable having in my squad from game week one.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Mooney last week for Huddersfield. I think that he might be an enabler for me to do Lukaku and Harry Kane.
Yeah. Gabbiadini at 7 million. I mean, if you can look past his kind of listen, it's a first season. Gabbiadini did join the squad kind of late, so I don't think we should blame him too much. I mean, he missed one penalty, and everyone kind of destroyed him for it. But
your tone of forgiveness is just.
I know.
It's tremendous, Josh. You've grown so much in the offseason.
I have. So let's revisit that discussion later. I currently don't have him in my squad. And part of it is because I'm just like, I'm really enamored with Lacazette right now. And I really want to find a way to fit him into my squad. And part of it is I just saw the Emirates Cup over the weekend. And he's this perfect finish in this 2-1 loss to Sevilla. And I just, you know, he's such a great finisher and such a natural goal scorer that. And I feel like he's not in a lot of squads right now. And so but I'm actually thinking about bringing in Ali and Eriksen and having Lacazette too. And then some cheaper third forward. And then I feel like I would have some Spurs coverage then, but I really don't know. I think we'll actually in a always cheating first, I think we're both going to try to release our starting squads before game week one this year. So everyone will have a chance to look and laugh, Brandon.
Wow, Josh, we haven't really talked this through yet. You're giving me like
putting you on the spot.
Stomach pains. Heung-min Son, I feel like we've got to mention him. 8.0, is that too rich for a guy who was, he's just played second fiddle to people who are just 1.5 more expensive.
And he did bounce in and out of the squad a little bit last year. I mean, he had 14 goals and 9 assists. So it's those numbers are certainly worthy of an 8 million price tag. But I mean, just compared to the other three, it doesn't seem like he's, you know, even just compared to it's 1.5 million more. But I feel like you're getting so much more consistency from Ali and Eriksen if you go for them.
He has an injury problem right now, which renders us a moot, unneeded. Needless conversation.
And then Danny Rose, who's still recovering from a knee injury, but he's a little overpriced at 6.5 million. Got a lot overpriced at 6.5 million. And I think he's going to lose some minutes to Ben Davies anyway. So I would avoid Danny Rose.
All right, can I talk about Watford? I feel like I've been waiting an hour to just to talk about the Hornets.
Yeah, I like this is the one I'd like, I don't know what's going on with Watford, so please, I want to get smarter.
All right, so they have a home opener hosting Liverpool, and then it's Bournemouth, Brighton, Southampton, and then Manchester City in game week 5. So there's it's an interesting sandwich of good fixtures. Mm-hmm. But as we know, Marco Silva, he was kind of the darling manager from last season who almost rescued Hull from relegation, but he couldn't. Mm-hmm. And here he is at Watford. So I think people have some certain high expectations of how he's going to lay out the squad.
Right.
Coming into a new season. So, players to buy. Let's not start with the players to buy section with Watford. let's go easy. Who to avoid?
Okay.
Etienne Capoue. 5.5. Boy, it was a good run last year. At 4.5, we all had our fun.
Mm-hmm.
Had a glorious trip, and it's all been ruined. So, don't be fooled. He's already an 8.2% of all managers' teams.
Way too high.
I mean, and of course he was a decent player for some stretches last season, but at 4.5, yeah, that was a great buy. At 5.5, you're kind of destroying your team.
Right.
Another guy to avoid, Jose Holabas at 5.0. He was on all sorts of set-piece delivery last season. He scored a lot of points for a lot of managers, but one would guess Marco Silva could mix things up. If Holabas is off those dead balls, then he is just a yellow card factory, and there is no value for him.
Right, exactly. And can I talk about one of your players to keep an eye on here, Brendan?
I know I have a player that you like on my keep an eye on list.
I do. It's Roberto Perea, who is a really fun. Okay, like his stats so far have not indicated what a talented player he is. He had just I think he was out for almost all of last season with an injury. And he got injured very early on in the season. So I think he's really off people's radar. It's actually very similar to Robert Snodgrass, who had a big injury and everyone kind of forgot about him. But Perea is just a really creative player, is capable of scoring, capable of assisting, former Juventus player. I think he's still coming back from the injury. I don't know if he's totally back yet or not, but he is, he's 6 million. So he's an interesting, possible long-term option.
The other guy to keep an eye on is Nathaniel Chalaba. I don't know how to pronounce that name, but he is
so like challah bread.
Yeah. Like challah bread. But he's in the Ruben Loftus-Cheek category of young Chelsea guys who finally got sent permanently to other teams, priced at 4.5 million. Now this journey for Chalaba is insane. So he's been on loan from Chelsea to various squads every season since 2010, and he was originally loaned to Watford. He has since been to Nottingham Forest, Middlesbrough, Burnley, Reading, Napoli, and finally here he is on a permanent deal with Watford. Now, I know nothing about, but I'm guessing it's going to be easier for Nathaniel Chalaba to make it into the Watford starting 11 than it is for Loftus-Cheek to get into the Palace starting 11.
Right.
So he's an interesting fifth midfielder shout if you're not satisfied with my sexy peach of a man, Tom Carroll, right. Straight out of the cast from Dunkirk.
Sure.
But he's certainly one to watch.
Okay.
Right. Now, quickly, players to buy from Watford. This is a good place to go collect 4.5 defenders or Aurelio Gomez coming in at 4.5 as a GK if you're looking for some rotation game weeks 2 through 4. And I'll just point out Prottle and Britos. These guys are a pretty decent central defensive pair, and they're active offensively on corner kicks. So there you go. Try it.
Okay, fair enough. Now, this team is depressing me right now. Let's move. They have no identity right now. I'm kind of waiting for it. I guess we'll never have those Dini Agallo days again, will we? That was so fun.
I mean, I will say about Dini at 6.5, the door is still slightly ajar for Dini to become a factor again.
Yeah, I agree. Did you say factor? Or factor.
was that a Freudian slip calling Troy Deeney a fat guy?
Brandon, West Brom, another team that I got some easy ones here, Brandon. I had the the Spurs one, but West Brom is an easier one. Okay, well, it's easy and it's not. Okay, here's the thing about West Brom. They have a great run of fixtures to start the season. They play Bournemouth at home, Burnley away, Stoke at home, Brighton away, West Ham at home, right? Five games in a row, all of which they are arguably favored to win. I'm sure they won't. And I think West Ham could be sneaky good this year. Okay, so players to buy. You kind of want to, you can pick your defender. Our pick would be, this is my pick, Craig Dawson. Just scored a goal over the weekend. He's $5 million. Then you got Ben Foster at $4.5 million. Now, I will note that they have not looked good at all in preseason. They have been losing a lot of matches and conceding a lot of goals. Basically with a squad that's pretty close to the squad they're going to have at the start of the season. So it gives me a little concern about clean sheets, but, it is the preseason. So, take it for what it is. The reputation that Pulis carries over from his Stoke days, with Huth and Shawcross, it makes you think that West Brom is this like absolute clean sheet machine, but they really weren't last year. I mean, the value in their defenders were in the, the goals that they were scoring, and like they kind of all scored a bunch of goals outside of Nyam, who I was like the one dummy that had Nyam while everybody else was getting goals from.
Or Johnny Evans.
Yeah, right, or Johnny Evans.
On that one infamous game week.
Right, exactly. Players to avoid. You might want to avoid Nyam, actually. Alan Nyam, he's not necessarily assured of a starting spot. And Hagazi, who they brought in the offseason as a slightly risky $4.5 million option. I'm not sure I'd take the risk because it's just not clear who's going to win that spot. I would probably pay the 0.5 more for Craig Dawson. And I also wouldn't double. It's kind of tempting to see these fixtures and think about double up in the defense. But I mean, to me, it's very unscientific, right? So if you're like statistically inclined, you can just ignore this whole like rant I'm about to go on here. But they have not.
I can't believe you're going to rant about West Brom.
I'm not going to rant exactly, but it's hard for me to get excited about them given what I saw week in and week out the second half of last season, which was a team that was just conceding an absolute boatload of goals, and they've looked bad in the offseason. And I also don't know if they have enough attacking threat to keep other teams from just kind of driving at them in every match, So
Che Rodriguez doesn't do it for you?
Doesn't quite do it for me, no. So McCauley is doubtful for the start of the season, which, also makes their defense a little bit worse. Brunt is now classified as a $5.5 million midfielder, so last year's really fantastic returns for him. He's kind of in that Kapoor category, right, where it was fun when he was cheap and out of position, and now it's just kind of...
it's not fun anymore.
Not fun anymore. So you've got Rodriguez, you've got Rondon, you've got Matt Phillips. These are all players with, at least a couple years of experience in the league, and none of them have really blown us away at any given time. Matt Phillips, $6 million. I wish he was $5.5 million. At $6 million, that seems a little high for a guy who was really mercurial. He had this run around Christmas last year where he was just unbelievable, and like everyone was bringing him into their team, and then it all really fell off for him after that.
Just disappeared.
Yeah,
he went all Nathan Redmond.
He did. Rondon, 8 goals and 3 assists last season. Never really delivered the way that they thought he was going to, when they brought him in. So I'm just not very bullish about West Brom, and I might end up having a defender from their squad in my team just because the fixtures are so good. I'm sure they I'm sure they will get some clean sheets at the start of the season. I mean, Bournemouth and Stoke at home, and that Stoke game in particular on game week 3 looks like a great clean sheet shout. So, take the whole team with a grain of salt is what I'll say.
Yeah, no, I agree. I guess that's where Ben Foster comes into the picking out these clean sheets in this stretch.
Yeah.
All right, we saved the craziest team for last, West Ham United.
Right.
Just looking into everything that's been going on to West Ham over the summer, I have been surprised, delighted, and confounded by West Ham. They have like a zillion injuries right now, so it's impossible to know what they're going to look like coming into game week 1, right. And maybe the people you want aren't actually the ones that are going to be starting. Like Lanzini looks like he may not be ready for game week 1. But let's just talk about their opening fixtures. They're away to Old Trafford, and then it's 3 away games right out of the bat. I think there are some issues with the London Stadium right now that they're tending to.
Right.
But it's Manchester United, Southampton, Newcastle. Then they get to host Huddersfield.
Yeah.
No, it's not bad. It does diminish my my feeling that they would have clean sheets, so, which leads me to the first player I want to talk about to buy, Joe Hart. Can you believe that you've got a guy like Jack Butland, who, yes, had this amazing season with Stoke, you know, way yonder 2 years ago.
Right.
But Joe Hart, starting keeper for England, at least off and on, comes in at 4.5? I would have assumed he would have been a 5.0.
Yeah, it's. I thought he was going to be 5.0, too. I mean, 4.5 is kind of like a come-and-get-me price. I'm still not sure. I know he didn't play that well for Torino last year. I don't think I'll have him in my squad, but I like that he's there. I mean, the whole team is constructed like they've got like one last chance to win it all or something. It's like they're building for like this season and this season only.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Bilic knows that if I don't make something happen and somehow somebody opened the coffers for him. So in is Joe Hart, and we have to talk about Chicharito at $7 million. He's already at 15.5% ownership.
Speaking of players that can fill that third striker slot.
Oh, absolutely. He could be in with a bullet. I wouldn't blink twice. I wouldn't blink once. I wouldn't even blink. I'd just stare at you if you had Chicharito in your squads. But he's just one of the legendary instinctual goal scorers. He'll score with his foot, his head, his butt, whatever you want. So that $7 million price tag is kind of a total gift to everyone. Where has he been, Josh? Well, he went to Bayer Leverkusen for two seasons where he did pretty well. He scored 28 goals over the course of 54 appearances for Bayer Leverkusen. So not bad. He's still scoring goals.
Yeah, did see a bit of a decline. 17 goals his first year, 11 last year. So that could be indicative of a lot of these strikers don't have. I mean, he's not a big player either, and so there's a concern about his size. I mean, they always like a striker that relies on a lot of speed can be a little can fall off, right? A little more quickly than a striker is built around be big and strong.
It's true, but this midfield is shaping up, and we'll talk about now players to keep an eye on. This midfield is shaping up for just a lot of movement, and it's just kind of an exciting shape. Sure. So Marko Arnautović, coming from Stoke City, is priced at 7.0. You're kind of waiting for him to push it to the next level that he may be capable of doing, or perhaps I wouldn't be surprised if we've already seen the best that Arnautović has to offer. But a lot of that rides on what he can do here at West Ham. I think he's going to come out and really push himself with this team. Midfielders, I think there's the biggest upside with him.
Just scored a goal for them in a friendly, so that's a good start to the season for him. Good start to the
I love your friendly stats.
I know. I did a little bonus.
The podcast should be scored a goal in a friendly.
Last night I did a little bonus research, so I was ready for this episode.
I dig it. I mean, he's going to have a fair amount of service coming to him via Lanzini. But Lanzini's got a certain issue with his knee right now, and it's not sure when he's coming back. So is that just missing the first couple of game weeks, or is it going to be out long term? We don't have a whole lot of information right now.
Yeah.
Which I kind of wish that we were scouting West Ham with all of these guys healthy. I'd be a little more excited.
Yeah.
But
I feel like we're going to have some combination of these players in our teams over the course of the season, but it does feel like you have to wait a little while to see how it's all going to shake out, especially with those. Well, okay, maybe not Chicharito, because you could see him getting off to a hot start. I mean, especially away to Man United in the first game week. I mean, wouldn't that just be? I feel like that's just the kind of thing that happens, right?
He comes back. Narrative has to happen.
Yeah, and it's a great narrative. Yeah, exactly. So we'll see what he does in game week one, and then Newcastle away in game week three, Huddersfield home game week four. I mean, pretty good fixtures, And if I wouldn't let that Man United fixture away scare me off of having Chicharito to start the season.
Now, can I sell you a Robert Snodgrass at $6 million?
Nope.
No, you can't.
He needed to be in that Gylfi Sigurdsson role, like he was at Hull. I just don't think he fits when there are other talented players around him.
Now, here's what I can tell you about this, Josh. Now, Mark Noble, Andy Carroll, and Manuel Lanzini all injured to start the season. These guys are all lined up to do penalties for West Ham. They do them. That's a verb that I use to describe penalties now. Mm-hmm. I feel like Snodgrass has got to be next up to bat to take these penalties.
I think it's Arnautović.
You think so?
I do think so. Yeah. He seems like the kind of guy who wants to take
penalties. You've seen Snodgrass take penalties before, haven't you?
I think
versus
so.
Arnautović?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. That one, I don't hazard a guess, Brandon. I'm too...
How about right here on the podcast? let's wager a friendly bet, one beer.
Okay.
One beer for who takes the first penalty. And maybe this bet won't come to fruition. Andre Ayew will take it.
Okay. All right. But that sounds good. I'll bet Arnie versus Snodgrass.
Players to avoid. This is another public service announcement. Just a heads up to the 5.6% of managers out there who have Ashley Fletcher in their squad. He has been sold to Middlesbrough. These guys get sold and then they get flagged, their value, assuming people don't sell them off before game week one starts,
right,
you could get really dinged. So make sure you don't have Ashley Fletcher in your team.
Brandon, we have come to the end, only longer than I thought we were going to be, about a half hour or so. So that's not bad. I don't know why. Yeah, I'm such an optimist. I always think every episode's going to be an hour long. Brandon, where can people find us?
People can find us at alwayscheating.com, where all of the ways to reach us are kindly listed and linked for you there. But if you want to follow us on Twitter, that's where we're most active. Go to twitter.com/hailcheaters. We're at facebook.com/alwayscheating. And do send us an email, hailcheaters@gmail.com.
That's right. And check out the new website. Brandon redesigned alwayscheating.com, and it looks fantastic. I highly recommend giving that a look. Okay, just in a quick shout out to Nicholas who wrote a great blog post that got a lot of attention, a lot of people talking over the weekend about points per minute. So definitely check that out. All right, well, that's it. I'm going to go lay down. This was a long podcast.
Good night, Josh.
Good night, Brandon.